Your heart beats faster and faster.
Well, we had Sean for a second there, and then we lost him, just like that. So what a great what a great way to start the show. I can hear you now, Sean. Why don't we get started?
Okay, did we get the opening phrase there?
We did not. We did not. Do it all over again.
Let's start over, guys. Bringing you the show that's got the critics all shook up. This is the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Oh, yeah. Paranormal broadcasting, where we're not over the hill, but we're climbing it fast.
Real fast. Hey guys, we're live in studio and we'll be in the G&D chat room all night long.
Oh, that's right. And you can log into that chat room by going to our website at www.ghostanddemon.com.
And this is the Ghostman, Sean B.
And this is Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter.
And this would be the Sunday, April 6th broadcast of our little show.
Oh, yeah, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is independently produced by Nathan Schoonover and Sean Burris and is broadcast live on Omnisound and KarmaCast Radio. And it is recorded for Blog Talk Radio, I Am Haunted Radio, and Planet Paranormal.
Okay, Paranormal Fat Cats, get ready. Tonight's guest, first up, we have Gary Joseph, author of Cape Encounters, which is a collection of some good old-fashioned ghost stories. He'll be talking to us about that tonight. Then a little later, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, Take Me Out to the Crowd. That's right. We'll be joined by Dan Gordon, author of Haunted Baseball. We'll be talking about real live ghost activity in the major leagues tonight on the G&D Show.
The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast. And if we don't have any more mistakes, it will start right now.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Original Bad Boys of Paranormal, and your host for tonight's show, Ghostman and Demon Hunter.
At least the little demon guy could be heard.
He could be heard. What happened? Would that just fall off? Or
you
what?
Just fell right off there. I was about to disconnect the whole show and start all over again.
I don't know what happened, man. It could have been that I was swigging from the jug that I have here, the magic jug that we keep in the G&D studio. It's full
is
of
that
Indiana
what that jug's
spine.
For? I don't want to tell you what I used it for then. Okay, moving on.
I knew it tasted a little tart, did it? Anyway, guys, welcome back, G&D Show listeners around the world. Thanks for joining us tonight on what's sure to be another great episode of our show.
Are you sure it's sure to be that? Are you sure?
Well, if I say it three times, I think I believe it. I've been saying it all week. This is going to be a good show. It's going to be a good show. But, yeah, we are back, guys, and we're bringing you the same old good old boys that we bring you week after week, myself and Demon Hunter. And what a week. What a week indeed, Demon Hunter.
Has it been a week, Sean? Has it been a full week?
It's been a full week since we did the show. Of course, last Sunday we had the great opportunity – we came at you live from, of course, the Haunted Warren Winery with that other show. And we were doing our...
Those guys over there. What's the name of that show? Ghostly something.
But we were doing
they
the show
They talk a
there.
Lot.
That
was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so cool being there. They were so gracious to have us. Once again,
we lost Sean Burris. Sean, you having a little bit of a problem there tonight, huh? Why, yes, Nathan, I am. Nice of you to notice.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
I don't know what the problem may be.
I am not sure. But we definitely have a problem going on. And before we go on with the show, Sean, and it keeps happening all night, I'm going to try and fix it. So we're going to have to disconnect for 1 second, and then I'm going to have to bring you back.
Let's do it. Stick around, guys.
Okay, and we're back, Sean. How are you sounding there?
I think I'm sounding okay, Demon Hunter. What do you think?
I think you're sounding good. You're sounding good. I haven't heard you sound that good in a very long, long time.
Well, I got a new cable for the microphone, actually. I tried it out tonight. Guess it didn't work, huh?
It's very touchy.
Oh, man, it's been one of those weeks, though. I got to tell you, man, I got the kids this weekend. It was Daddy's weekend with the boys, and out here in Indiana, it was a gorgeous weekend. I know you didn't have that in beautiful Connecticut, right?
No, we had one nice day, and then it got a little cold.
It was like 73 degrees here, man, today. That was today. Yesterday it was like 60. So me and the boys went out. We went back to the Indianapolis Zoo, beautiful Indianapolis Zoo. And I kind of thought about you, actually. I've seen a couple of rhinos just laying around.
Yeah. I think about you when I see the monkey cages, too.
You know, I never thought that rhinos could be so dirty. Rhinos and giraffes, I mean, they were terrible. I mean, it was just filthy. Me and the kids got a picture. And, well, you just have to go to my MySpace page to check it out. But these giraffes, man, they were funky. Funkadelic. I loved them. I loved them. Just like us, man. Just like us. But so how did your week go? Did you have a busy week?
I didn't have too bad of a week. I started my new job. And, you know, once I know how much about it I can talk about on the air, we'll discuss that more. But
Prostitution's still illegal.
No, my new job, Sean. I turned down the job you offered me. But
make some quick bucks for my friends. What can you do?
Yeah, well, I can't risk having that on my record. Enough already.
I had the kids, and yesterday it was so pretty. We went to the zoo. We was driving around. I didn't want to go home. You ever get like that, Demon Hunter? You're driving around. It's too pretty to go back inside, so you just drive, right?
That's right.
Well, I got this book. It's called Guardians of the Soul. I had to look it up real quick. Hold on one second. Let's see.
You bought a book?
I bought a book. It's called Guardians of the Soul. It's by John Bauer, and it's a book of all these great – and everybody listens to the show. And Demon Hunter, you know I'm into the black and white cemetery pics. I love it. I love it. I'm a ghost hunter that loves – taking pictures, and you know what that came from, because as a ghost hunter, you spend so much time in these old places, these old cemeteries, and you just don't have much to do. Sometimes things just aren't happening, so I start taking pictures of the cemeteries, and I went out and got this book. It caught my eye, and it's got all the pictures of old cemetery statues, angels, little kid statues, stuff like that, you know, some real old stuff, and it tells you where they're at. So me and the boys, we drove around this weekend, and we went out here in southern Indiana mostly, and we took some great pictures, man. We did some cemeteries. It felt so good to be back out there in the cemetery. Even if we weren't ghost hunting, we were just taking pictures. But it was great, man. You got to check them out.
Well, you know, I didn't get out this week. I went out last week. I took a kind of a week off. And when I came back, I was really looking forward to this week on BSG, Battlestar Galactica. So they were finally coming back after all this time.
Wait a second, this show just went into the geek hole, man.
Yes, I know. What can I say? I went geeky on us. I am a Battlestar Galactica geek. And
you know,
have been...
For our listeners out there, you can never accuse us of trying to pick up dates from the show, because once you find out that Nathan watches Battlestar Galactica, all those hopes go out the window. Thanks, brother. I appreciate that.
What can I say? I am a man of many talents and many interests, and this week's interest was Battlestar Galactica. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for it since, like, last November, since the last episode was. And do you remember what they did to us with Star Wars, Sean? We waited for the new Star Wars to come out for years and years. And
right.
When it finally came out, the first movie came out, and it sucked.
I didn't think it sucked that much.
Well, it was all backstory, and, you know, it was what they had to tell us so that the next two episodes would be interesting. And basically, I felt that's what they did to us this week with Battlestar Galactica. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for the show since November, and it came on this week, and it answered some questions that people have been sitting around waiting for, but it was all, like, storyline so that we'd be ready for what's to come. And when it was all done, I was sitting there going, no, I want my show and I want it now.
But, you know, I got to ask you, Demon Hunter, did you have the, when you were sitting in the recliner waiting for this, did you have the Kleenexes on one side and the bottle of Jergens lotion on the other? I'm sorry.
Well, Sean.
The comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
Thank you, big demon guy. I appreciate that.
That's right.
No, it's, it was kind of, one of those things where I told Chrissy to go away, Chrissy P to go away for a little while because I needed some time alone with Starbuck and,
Does that work?
Yes, it does. But now I have to wait another week for my good dose of BSG.
Right.
So after waiting since November, I am still jonesing for the next episode of BSG. I think they did it on purpose just to keep me hanging, you know.
I thought you was promoting the use of prescription drugs again.
It's going to be one of those nights, isn't it, Sean?
The comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
But anyway, so do we have any news this week, Sean?
Man, we got all kinds of news, but I got all kinds of things to talk about. I wanted to give a shout-out to a very good friend of the show, author Marie D. Jones. She's the author of the new book, Super Volcano, Demon Hunter, and she sent us a book this week to the Ghostman Demon Hunter Studios. And I haven't got a chance to read it yet, but man, the front cover looks hot.
Just the volcano book that we've all been waiting for?
Yeah, this is the new one. It just came out, or it's coming out, and she sent the G&D show one of the very first copies. Thank you, Marie. She's a hottie, and so's her books. And actually, she's going to be on the show here in a couple weeks, hopefully. We got to deal with her agent and her busy, busy schedule.
Well, our agent, our people will contact her people. And
I know. Hey, have you heard this story? Apparently it was on Oprah this week, so you probably did. But it's about the pregnant man grows ever... Huh?
Thank you, Sean. Saying that I would know because it was on Oprah. I feel so much better.
You know you remember the book. But anyway, the pregnant man grows ever larger in the buzz, and it's on the buzz new at yahoo.com, of course. And it says, on Thursday, Oprah introduced Oregon resident Thomas Beatty. Beatty, B-E-A-T-I-E. To anyone who hadn't yet heard of him, Beatty is a transgender. It's kind of close to home, isn't it, Nate? A transgender man who is legally male. He's 6 months pregnant, dude.
Well, you know, at what point do you become legally male in this country? Because if you can still get pregnant, I would think that would kind of negate your being male.
Right, that's what I thought. And it just shocks me. And, of course, it's not... I mean, of course, transgender, that's very cool, very touchy subject, man. Whatever, you know, whatever makes your boat float, man, whatever makes you happy, go with it. But this cat's pregnant. So for the first time in history, I believe, somewhat of a man is having a baby for his family.
I got to say, if it's a man, then he has lost his status as man. Okay, if he's pregnant. I don't know.
We could be in breach of some kind of
his
thing.
His contract
here,
is broken at that point.
But he's pregnant. Apparently he's fat as a hog and ready to pop. But it shook me up when I heard that. So, Oprah, huh?
Actually, I saw them joking about it on Saturday Night Live. That's the only way I really found out about it. But
classic entertainment. But apparently villagers catch a witch and beat her up in the... and parade her around the town. This comes from Bihar, New Delhi. Apparently, just real quick, man, I didn't really go into the story that much because it's the same old abusive stuff against the witches out in Bihar, New Delhi. Geez. But we had done that story a couple months ago, Demon Hunter, about, you know, the witch trials in Salem and how they were burnt and how most of them weren't witches and stuff. But apparently this was a medicine woman, and she lived in this village. And they got a bunch of stuff on her. She said she was helping people with their ailments. You know, she was like a witch doctor. And apparently they had accepted her in their homes for many, many, many years. But she worked on, I think it was the daughter of like a chief in the village, and he didn't like the results. So she went back to the village to get some of her luggage and stuff like that so she could leave. And apparently they beat the tar out of her and paraded around town, just kind of tar and feathered her. So there you go, guys. Apparently the persecution of witches still happen out in Bihar, New Delhi. So, I don't know. I know a lot of witches here in Indiana. If anybody was... Did I say witches? Yes, I meant to say witch. But if anybody... I know a lot of witches out here that should be...
The comments of Sean Burrs do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
I don't want to wake up tomorrow growing a tail, Sean, so that had to be...
Hey, if there's any hot witches here in India, or any hot witches that listen to the show, come on. My door's open door policy, guys. Especially for witches. They're hot.
Sean, keep digging the hole.
They don't have big green noses and warts and stuff. That's all in fairy tales. They're hot now.
You just keep getting deeper in that hole there, Sean. Well, this week in our weird location of the week, Sean, would be in Northern Virginia.
Virginia,
where there is still a dirt road that you can turn off of at the. Let's see where this would take place.
In Michigan. Apparently, that's where the. The pavement company stopped in Michigan.
Well, it's just off of Sunset Hill Road.
It would
find Reston Road, but everybody knows it as the Bunny Man Road.
The Bunny Man.
Yep. When you head up the road, most people will tell you that you will find the house that was built by the Bunny Man, where he supposedly one Halloween. Killed his wife, his children, then put on a bunny suit, went to the front door, and greeted all the lovely children, giving them candy, with his family dead in the background, sitting there enjoying the festive holiday. If you ask people around Ruston, Virginia, who the Bunny Man was, you'll get 100 different stories, which basically have three things in common. He kills people, preferably children. He wears a bunny suit or rabbit skins, and he likes to scare the poop out of little kids.
Right.
But if you want to check out the Russet Road and the home of the Bunny Man, you can head down to Northern Virginia or head over to Weird US at www.weirdus.com. Check out our friends Mark and Mark with Weird US and Weird New Jersey, and let them know what you think about the Bunny Man, Weird US, and the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
Right, right. That's like Peter Cottontail gone terribly wrong.
If you look at the picture, it's great. The Bunny Man sitting there holding an axe covered in blood. Yeah, you know.
Well, actually, Mark and Mark sent us that. It's on the board game.
Yes.
He's one of the action figures.
Yes, he is. I've actually, like I said, I got that board game for my birthday, and it's one of Chrissy P and my favorite pastimes now is to pull out the Mark and Mark game. However, it's really hard to play. It's not actually, I shouldn't say it's hard to play. It's hard to understand the directions.
Right.
You know,
it's hard to play nude with Nathan because action figures come up missing. Hey, where'd the Bunny Man go?
The comments of Sean Burrs do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
Anywho, you know, I'm getting a little worried, Sean. We're getting close to time to bring out Gigi and Inside the Horror. And she doesn't appear to be... Oh, she's available now. Okay. But...
Well, she's big time. Yeah. She's big time. She's doing her tour, her world tour. She's all over the place. She don't have time for G&D.
But, no, that game is... It's really fun. But you really got to pull out the directions and study them close to figure out how to play the game. So... But
and of course, brother, that game is called, what, Weird U.S. The Board Game, right?
Weird U.S. The Board Game with Mark and Mark in their little car going around trying to snap pictures of all the oddities you can find around the U.S.
Is that a drinking game? I hope so.
Any game with you, Sean, is a drinking game.
Yeah.
But hey, before...
I'll drink to that.
Before we move on any further, do you want me to tell you about one of the reviews Ghostman and Demon Hunter got this week?
We actually got a review.
We got a review. I'm not going to give the name of who gave the review. If people want to check it out, they can find it on iTunes with the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show available on iTunes. But it was definitely an interesting review if you'd like to hear what it says.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it. I'm excited. My nipples are hard. Let's go for it.
Okay. The title of this review is juvenile, but... You're getting it already, where this is headed?
Juvenile. Well, that takes me out of the equation.
Well, let's see if I can rattle this review off.
Rattle it off, Big Daddy. Do it.
Since these two first rode in on the coattails of another paranormal-themed show, I have tried and failed to keep them as a regular download on my list of podcasts. Between the constant barrage of middle school potty humor and the ghost man providing his own catchinatory laugh track, this show is, in my opinion, almost unbearable. I said, ooh, almost.
Uh-huh.
This is where he really starts to bring in the big words, Sean.
Okay, big words. Let me get my dictionary.
Puerile, blah, blah, blah. I know this word, too, and I can never pronounce it.
Skip it.
Persiflage. Aside, basically he's saying childish banter. Aside, these shock jocks of the supernatural nonetheless managed to pull an impressive array of guests from all aspects of the paranormal community. It is for this reason alone that I recommend giving them a listen, albeit with a finger poised over the click wheel. If you are a 13-year-old who is into the paranormal, you have struck podcast gold. For everyone else, I recommend skipping to the guests. Well, 13-year-old humor. You know what I think of that, Sean?
What do you think of that, Demon Hunter?
Why don't you let everybody know what I think about that? That's about right. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. If you want to send in a review to us, we take everyone serious, and we do listen to our reviews, and this is what we think of them. Okay? We love you.
But we did get 3 out of 5 stars, so we can't be that bad. Can't be that bad. That's right. So, Sean, we've got about...
You know how bad I've been waiting to break out this smart machine.
Oh, Sean, we've got about 2 minutes left. We have any more news for tonight?
Well, you know what? We were talking about... Hold on a second. There you go. But we were talking about a couple weeks ago, haunted houses for sale, people that were selling that. And, you know, there was a question. If you move into a haunted house, can you sue the previous owners for not disclosing that information? Well, here's another story. It's titled Devils in Detail of Haunted House Sale by Malcolm Moore. And this comes out of Rome, so bear with me on the big words. But after enduring howls in the night and creaking staircases for the past 3 years, an Italian family is preparing to sue the previous owners of their house for not telling them it was haunted. Gitano Bastilli, 57, and his wife Stephanie paid $120,000 for the modern home in the Umbrian town of Spoleto in 2005. Encouraged by the fact that all the furniture and the fittings were left by the owners, right down to the coffee cups, we considered it the deal of the century, said Mr. Bastilio, or whatever the heck his name is. The couple claimed they were unaware that the house on Santo Road had been built close to the disused cemetery, or the strange goings-on at the address during the 1970s had necessitated to an exorcism and prompted a visit from Perugia University's paranormal research team. The ghosts started their hauntings on the first night, said Mr. Bastelli, a former long-distance lorry driver, whatever that is. I woke suddenly at around 1 or 2 in the morning. There was water seeping from under the bathroom door. The hot water tap was pouring out boiling water, and the room was full of steam. My wife was stunned because she had turned off everything before going to bed. Okay, we heard this a lot, right, when we were out investigating. He claimed that by the next morning, malevolent spirits had left luminous green mold all over the walls. I'm thinking he should have paid for an inspector before he moved in. But after that, things got worse, he said. The sound of chains rattling had alarmed his 10-year-old daughter and claimed that the lawnmower and his wife's car had spontaneously combusted. Now Mr. Bastilli has engaged a lawyer, Antonio Frescati, to sue the previous owners for failing to inform him that the house was haunted. We have a good case, said Mr. Frescini, or whatever, under Article 1490 of Italian law. You have to tell buyers if there's anything wrong. I think that the previous owners will settle out of court. A local historian, Sergio Grifani, confirmed that the exorcism had been performed on a girl in the house in 1977. The local papers at the time said a girl had been possessed by the devil and, excuse me, and had been taken to the bishop. Nothing helped until Pope John Paul II prayed for her. The episode was confirmed by Father Gabriel Amorth, the Vatican senior exorcist, who said Pope Virgili carried out an exorcism on this girl who was rolling around the floor of her house, of this house. He could not confirm whether the house was the same on Santiago Road or Santo Road or not. But that's a story. I thought that was kind of interesting, Demon Hunter, because we were talking about that. Apparently, in Rome, they have the same thing. It's Article 1490 that says you have to disclose if the house is haunted or
well,
anything
actually,
bad.
Well, Article 1490 in Rome states that they have to declare if anything is wrong with the house. I don't think it's probably been used for that in the past, but maybe it has. The question here being is, will the people claim that they felt that the exorcism was performed on the daughter or on the home? And if it was performed on the daughter, then there was nothing wrong with the house, and therefore they are not responsible.
See, always a loophole, G&D show listeners. Always a loophole, legality, if you will. But, you know, it's very interesting because I thought the similarities were the same, you know, with the U.S. and Rome, all around the world, they're starting to do this stuff because families are starting to experience more and more, apparently, chains rattling in the middle of the night and green mold. So, you know, when I'm talking to somebody, I'd be like, well, you know, I think the front yard water main might be busted. No, yeah, I had an exorcist done here about 10 years ago.
If not, Charles Dickens will definitely be involved later on. He'll be suing because they stole his story from them. But
right.
You know, that has nothing to do with what's going on now, Sean. But why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, we'll have Gigi with Inside the Horror.
Stick around, guys. Gigi's going to get crazy up next.
Experience the charm and mystery of the Deep South through ghost stories by attending the highly respected Roswell Ghost Tour. Your experienced guide will lead you on this two-hour outdoor walking tour through the historic district of Roswell. One of the highlights of the tour is a visit to Founders Cemetery, the burial site of Roswell King, where bodies are buried beneath modern streets and houses. Grand Greek Revival mansions and humble mill workers' apartments are some of the haunted sites you'll see on this mile of easy walking. Check RoswellGhostTour.com for the current schedule. Tours run most Friday and Saturday nights year-round, and private tours may be arranged. Reservations are required. Call 770-649-9922. That's 770-649-9922 for more information. Happy haunting from Roswell Ghost Tours.
Objective is to kill mankind.
The goal of the demonic is death. Plain and simple, it is death.
All of a sudden, he gets slapped in the face and he flies against the wall. And his hands went to tear across the face.
It's really scary here. I mean, the body is scary. The wood in the steel, our face is very short.
It was escalating to where objects started moving.
This is a war that we're fighting. What you're talking about does not think in human terms. It is from another time and place.
Demonology today. Class is now in session.
Featuring Janet Deal, Alan Glassell, and Deborah Johnson.
Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. Central, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Only on the I Am Haunted Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jim Willis of Weird Ohio and Ghosts of Ohio fame. And I got to tell you something. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show rocks my world. Check them out at ghostanddemon.com and tell them Jim Willis sent you.
Yes, well, Sean, just before we get started, I want to apologize to all those listening in on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter phone line, because once again, Sean forgot that people hear us during the commercials.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we said anything bad, did we?
So, without further ado, Sean, are you ready for... Is there... any more For those of you who missed the conversation during the commercial, what's the question for the night, Sean? Sean.
Oh, what's your favorite scary movie?
Yo, Twin City.
Yo, boys, 5'9". Y'all wanna make a movie? All I can do is laugh.
What's going on, baby girl?
I like that. Sean. Oh, yeah.
I wasn't sure if we lost Sean again for the night.
We got our first review tonight, Gigi. Did you hear it?
Yeah. So did everybody on the phone line. Oh, God, that's great.
We appreciate all reviews at the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. As long as they're more than they're 3 stars or better, we appreciate them.
I think so. I'm so happy. But you know what, guys? I'm going to get so much use, Gigi, out of this little fart machine. I got a remote control. You can do elongated farts, or you can do short, bursts. I'm going to take this with all the conferences. This
I'd like to send a message out there to Sean's 2 sons. If you see the fart machine, take it for your own. Daddy doesn't need it anymore. Go ahead. Take it. Take it home.
Take it for your own.
Oh, God. I choked on my own spit. We're so funny.
Oh, yeah.
You know what, though? I never got to talk about gnomes tonight.
Put that down as a review, Sean, on the on iTunes. Choked on my own spit. We're so funny.
I know. I'm trying to talk about something very, very serious. It's plaguing the United States, possibly the globe, okay? But gnomes and fairies are attacking people in the streets, apparently.
Are they now?
Well, it happened in Argentina. Remember, I read that story a couple weeks only on the G&D show. And, I've been studying up on gnomes and fairies. And apparently there's a lot of cats out there that see these little guys running around in the garden, nonetheless. Yes. Not the Walmart plastic variety type. But
you know what that reminds me of? Do you remember Cat's Eye, the Stephen King thing with Drew Barrymore? And the little gnome thing came out.
That wasn't a gnome, it was a troll, and to this day that plagues me in my sleep.
Does that bother you?
That does.
And he would come up and try to steal her breath. Oh, God, that was great. That was great. Hello. I remember being a kid watching that going, that is so cool.
I didn't sleep for weeks after I saw that.
I wrote a song about it, folks. I'm not going to play it right now, though. That's for our anniversary.
About trolls and Drew Barrymore. Okay.
I did.
Well, half the people Drew Barrymore dates are trolls, so it's fine.
She used to have... Maybe I got a chance then, is what you're saying, Gigi.
You're in. It's a shoo-in. It's a shoo-in.
I'm more of a gnome.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sean, you're a step above a troll, okay?
Right. I'm more of a gnome. More of a gnome, but I'm more of a classy dresser.
Yeah. Or like that show, David and the Gnomes. Who remembers that? David the Gnome, whatever.
Oh, that's right, David and the Gnomes.
Yeah, do you remember that? He rode the little, what was it, the fox?
Yeah, and the other gnomes rode bunny rabbits and stuff like that. Yes, yeah. I do remember David and the Gnome. Oh, Sean,
right.
That stopped being funny about 15. Stop the 13-year-old potty humor, Sean.
Yeah, Sean,
just stop.
That's like 13-year-old potty humor. What's going on here?
I wonder where our show got that from. Hey, it got me through middle school, okay?
You know what? But hey, any publicity is good publicity. So, you know what's funny, though, is the person that wrote that review, I guarantee you any money, they're still sitting listening to the show.
Hey, you know what I forgot to do, Sean? You forgot to talk about gnomes, and I forgot to send our thanks out to our listeners in Australia this week.
Oh!
In Melbourne, Australia. Actually, we have listeners all through Australia. I couldn't believe it when I saw this. There were places in Australia that didn't even have names. That, the only place I'd ever seen anything like them was in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. But,
which is a fantastic movie, by the way.
That's right. And,
hello, mates down under. I want to get down under with you. You know what I'm saying? Down under. Dirty.
Not the comment to make after I brought up Priscilla, Queen of the Desert there, Sean.
Now we just lost the Australian fan base.
I don't get it. I've never seen it. Is that a porn?
It's,
No, that's why you haven't seen it, Sean.
Okay.
Do you remember a few years back there was a movie called Tu Wong Fu?
Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
It starred what was it, Wesley Snipes.
John Leguizamo.
And
I must have missed that.
Who was the guy from Dirty Dancing?
Patrick Swayze.
And they were all drag queens.
Right.
And they were
By the way, I feel bad about that, so I want to give my shout-out to Patrick Swayze. I hope you get better, dude. I hope you fight it. You know, good stuff.
Yes, I did hear about that, too. Our best wishes go out to Mr. Swayze. But
look at the G&D show. We're sending well wishes to Patrick Swayze.
maybe we'll get a good review on iTunes from Patrick Swayze. I'll read that one on the air.
I enjoyed those 13-year-olds.
Yes.
That's a great 13-year-old. We got a report from the chat room. Ghost Chaser says, "Keep on farting, Sean." So this one's for you.
Thanks, Ghost Chaser. Yep. That helped a lot.
Yeah, that was great.
But basically, that movie, Tu Wong Fu, came from the original movie, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
So, Sean, are you catching on as to what kind of following?
It's a movie about drag queens, Sean, okay?
Oh, no. I fell right into that one.
But speaking of movies, GG, what do we have this week?
Well, guys.
Hopefully it's something transgender person in it.
I saw a lesson here, so I decided that we should have lesson time, I guess, because this just has been plaguing me for a while, and I keep trying to remember to bring it up, but of course we get sidetracked with our potty humor, so I never remember to bring it up. I never remember to bring it up, but this time I had to put my foot down, I had to talk about it. So I went to Hollywood Video. And I hope we get some sort of free movie rentals for saying that or whatever. But anyway, went to Hollywood Video, and it's funny because Hollywood Video actually has a better selection of horror movies than Blockbuster does. So, I mean, that's preferably where I prefer to go. But my thing is, I watch people when they're in the video store, and it's hysterical because I watch the faces, and I watch what people do, and everybody goes by the box art of a movie. It's that old thing, don't judge a book by its cover. It's don't judge a movie by the box art, okay? So this has been plaguing me forever, like ever since I was a kid, and I'd watch people go, my dad was notorious for it. You know, I mean, even the ones that don't even read the back, you know, the ones that just look at the, oh, looks like a good picture, you know, throw it in, yeah, let's go. Even if they do read the back, they still are like, oh, wow.
That's how I pick the movies out of the $5 bin at Walmart.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. $5 bin at Walmart. No, but even the ones that read the back, they're like, oh, this sounds like a great movie. Yeah, why does it sound like a great movie? Because they had somebody from PR write it. Come on. Come on. Of course it's going to sound great. They're trying to shop you the movie. So anyway, I went and I said, you know what? I'm going to pick a movie based on the box art. And I'm going to review it and show everybody why you should not judge a movie by the box art. So I rented The Ghosts of Edendale, made in 2003.
Box.
Written and directed by Stephen, I hope I get this right, Avalis, something like that.
Hey, I couldn't pronounce a word I knew earlier, so go ahead with that, GG. We'll give you that one.
The tagline is, some people are dying to make it in the movies. Yeah. I think it's just people dying to get out of the theater, dying to, you know, get away from this movie. But anyway, the plot's pretty simple. These people moving in this new house. It's supposedly haunted, whatever. It's up on this street, Edendale, in, you know, California, you know, the movie business. It's all, and I mean, it's kind of cool, you know, if you're into movies, it's kind of cool. It's all about the business. And, you know, you have sound guys that live down the street. And it's like a little community of film people. And these two move in, they're writers, and they're trying to make it in the film business. So they move into
this
house.
Are they transgender? Is
no.
One of them pregnant or no?
No. Oh, wait, that's Sean. Home movies. We don't discuss home movies, okay? Anyway, no. So pretty much they move in. There's a bunch of spirits in the house. The old previous owners left mysteriously. Yada yada yada. It had, you know, it had an interesting. Like you're like, oh, okay, I could get into this. Yeah. It stars, like, TV alums, like Stephen Wastel, whatever. Apparently, I can't pronounce anything. What did I catch from you, Nathan? What did I catch? Anyway.
I'm sure.
But, see, it pretty much they move in. Things start to happen. her husband or her boyfriend, whoever he is, starts to change. She becomes all Jack Nicholson-ish, and oh god, things are crazy. She goes nuts at the end, whatever. Same movie that every frickin' movie that's out there. Okay. This is less to do with ghosts and more to do with them trying to do a Shining type thing, but they fell extremely short. Like, seriously, I shudder to think. Like, I actually sat through this for 2 hours of my time. Seriously, I did. Like, they totally tried to emulate The Shining, where he descended into madness because of the ghosts. And they were influencing him, things like that. Come on. All right? I mean, you're not Jack Nicholson. This is not a Kubrick film. You don't have a whiny little like Shelley Duvall running around. Come on. Get over it. So, it didn't work. But it's okay. We give him points for trying. But this just – I had to talk about this because this is such – I hate when this happens. And it just – it blows my mind. I go to video stores or I hear people talk or I hear people actually go into theaters. You know, they see a preview. Oh, this is a great movie. Oh, God, this is going to be an awesome movie. People! Why do they write things on the back of movies? Why do they – edit a preview the way they do to get you to spend your money to see it. Will it actually be good? Probably not. I mean, if it looks like every other thing out there, it's probably not going to be good. If it looks a little different, if it looks like it's got a new concept, chances are it'll probably be good. No. So this blew my mind. But I had to talk about the box art thing. So The Ghost of Edendale, please. Please.
It's hot.
It's hot. It's hot. No. No, quite the opposite. But that got me because every time I can't stand it. And I keep my mouth shut. I don't like to start fights in the stores, so I keep my mouth shut, but come on.
You've been hating for the last 2 weekends.
I'm going nuts. I'm like, okay, come on. No. I'm just trying to weed out certain things. And after, you know, going to Nashville, you know, I was at the convention in Nashville and, you know, I spent a lot of time around the film people, you know, and working with film and things like that. I think it's about time that somebody just started going through and, okay, yeah, this sucks. No, we're not going to put up with it. Okay, that sucks. No, we're not going to put up with it. Because the reason they're doing most of this is because people are paying them to do it. We're not creating a difference. We're not telling them. We sit here and moan and whine about, oh yeah, I don't like this type of movie, but yet we pay money to promote these movies going on. And so, I don't know, I think the G&D show is trying to keep our listeners up to date and to keep them away from horrible messes and things like that. There's one tiny good thing I could say about this movie.
Yes.
They did this whole, since it was Hollywood with the ghosts and everything, they did this whole thing where they tried to bring back the silent film history of Hollywood. It was a totally made-up story, like, as far as what they were trying to work with it. But, you know, it had these four studio heads that back in the day when silent films were going, they hung one of the day players because he didn't do his job. So it was, like, an interesting story and how they mixed it into the actual silent film industry of Hollywood and the actual area at the time. So that was the only cool thing because I like it when they actually – like, a movie actually takes the time to try to build off of something that was already there. But when you go kind of
No, you said it twice.
You realize every time you do that, it means it's going to be weeks before we get back on the radio.
Yeah.
I apologize. You said it. That's why we need a little guy sitting in a little box that has a little beep.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are streaming, so we don't get one of those. So we actually have
to watch what we say. Let him out of the box, David. Let him out of the box.
We actually have to watch what we say.
Let him out of the box. Well, I mean, it's. I apologize to anybody that's offended by that word.
I am.
I seriously do. Apparently, in Britain, it's not that bad. So,
right.
Anyway, so culturally, we're not looking at a bad word. But anyway, no. I digress. So, It just drives me nuts, though. I can't handle it. I can't handle it anymore, guys. I'm ready to like punch myself in the head. I can't handle it. And I mean, I don't know how many people I watch, and I go through the horror section, and I'll stand there a good 10 minutes and just sort of watch the people that go through, and the remarks I get, the people I see going through, the way that they react towards horror films and what they should watch, it's ridiculous. I was like, oh my God. I was like, seriously, I could go out right now, make like some retarded 5-minute movie with like some camera from the 80s, totally have it make no sense and not be good in any way at all. And like, if as long as I Photoshop a nice picture on the cover, they'll buy it. I was like, really? Are we in that? Is our society that disposable? Can I pose that question? Are we such a disposable society we don't take the time to, like, read the back of the box or, like, look past the picture? Like,
much like the documentary of my life.
Seriously, look past the picture, people. If it looks Photoshopped, the movie, this tells you something. This tells you something about the movie. And I don't care. There's a lot of indie films out there that really try really hard to be good. And some of them are genuinely good. I give them credit. There's a lot of indie films I do like. But there's a lot that are just the new stream of mainstream indie. It's appalling, really. They're just trying to make a fast buck. And they, you hear all the stories. I did it because I have passion for filmmaking. Yeah, no, really? No. No. And totally trying to be the next Steven Spielberg really had nothing to do with it, right? Oh, okay. All right. So it's just complete ridiculousness, and I can't stand it anymore. And I don't know, fans. I don't know. What do our fans think? I would love to hear. I think maybe we should have a call-in show a couple weeks from now. I would love to hear what the fans think about all this because they're like our silent army, and it's just – it's kind of funny. It's
I would
just
love to hear them call in.
Sean's like, I would just like to know they're alive. It's okay.
Just call in and sit there, guys.
But really, like, I rented this movie with the best intentions, and I always watch a movie with the best intentions, impartial viewing, things like that. But when it's bad, it's bad. And when it's stale, it's stale. And this movie wasn't shot bad. It by no means had bad intentions, but it was stale. It was a slow buildup all the way through. And don't try to pass it for a ghost movie when you really don't have, you know, I mean, the ghosts just weren't there. It just wasn't, it, you know, they tried to take a Shining turn towards it, but it didn't work. So, I don't know what to say.
Well, so, I guess they tried.
Not the Shining. But
I hope that this guy that directed this, I hope that maybe, like, this was his first film, and, like, he's trying to, you know, make better films, or he's trying to, like, make a better story, hint with the story. So I'm just trying to put it out there, you know, a little
help.
Hey,
Gigi, people with movies like that, these little independent movies, do they make enough to kind of, a couple hundred grand at least, to kind of sit back and relax a little bit, or is it just a bust?
You mean like a profit off people watching it?
Yeah.
It really depends. I know somebody that sold one of their movies to Lionsgate, and because Lionsgate, just like every studio, they have a little offshoot branch that goes out and buys indie films, and you know, they make a profit off them. It's like a quick buck for the movie studios. So I know that Lionsgate picked up their film and like changed the title and stuff. And he made initial money off of it, and I think he makes a little bit, but you really don't make that much. Like, if it's a really small independent film, I'm talking like $20,000, $30,000, the chances of you making your money back are very slim. But like I said, there's a lot of indie films out there. If they really get pushed, if they're backed by the right people, like if you have good investors, or you get it shown in theaters, or, you know, whatever, you know, that's a different story. So,
right.
So, but well, for the majority of indie filmmakers out there, no, they don't get their money back.
Well, what are you going to do, man? I mean, everybody's pumping them out. I just didn't know if they made some money off of them or not. They got to have money somewhere to put it together, you know?
Yeah, I noticed a lot of these are I'm totally not knocking independent filmmakers, but I noticed that a lot of the people that I've run into were middle-aged guys, and I don't know if this is like a midlife crisis or something. I don't know. They're like, hey, I got
some people buy a Corvette, others make an indie film.
That's exactly what it is. That's the trend now because it's power. You know, making a movie is power nowadays. It no longer means what it used to mean, making a movie, passion in filmmaking and it being an art form. But don't get me wrong, there's a lot of indie filmmakers out there that still hold true to that. And I give them respect and they come out with great stuff time after time. And, you know, I will start reviewing more indie films that people should see. But, you know, it's a power trip nowadays. You know, people want to make a movie. You know, everyone wants to be in a movie. It's the disposable society we're in. It's like quick fame.
Because knowledge is power.
Yeah, quick fame, quick fortune. G.I. So if you say you're making a movie, they're like, I want to be in it because I could be famous and be like Angelina Jolie. And it's just, no.
I could be like Angelina Jolie.
Do you guys remember that?
Because yes,
knowledge is power. Schoolhouse Rock.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, I didn't hear you. I was like, what? Huh?
Nobody listens to you, Sean. It's fine.
Conjunction, junction. What's your function?
Function. Yeah, I liked it.
That was great. Schoolhouse Rock rocks.
Well, Gigi, we've got to wrap up because we've got to get ready for our guest.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know me. I can ramble.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have our first guest for tonight. And who would that be, Sean?
First guest, guys, Gary Joseph. He's the author of Cape Encounters. Up next, sure to be a good one. Stick around.
We'll talk to you soon, Gigi.
Thanks, guys, for putting up with me.
Love you, Gigi.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I then reach out, touch a ghost with my hand, and lock him into place until I choose to let him go.
Join us on a real-life ghost hunt with Dr. Gary Hawkins and his team of investigators.
Yeah. Oh, you it's so in the opposite yeah. way that, like yeah. that. That's freaky.
It came from behind you. How the heck did it come from behind you?
To make that kind of shadow, there is no... The only light is from that way.
That was amazing. There was no light. The camera's facing the same direction it is now. It couldn't have been. I mean, there could have been no shadow passed behind. Unless it wasn't something that normally creates a shadow.
Well, you know what? I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I can't explain it. That was weird.
That's the spirits of the Rockcliffe Mansion. Seeing is believing.
Buy online. shop.ezproductions.net.
We'll be right back.
The American Ghost Society's 12th annual Haunted American Conference will be held June 20th and 21st in Decatur, Illinois.
Hosted by Troy Taylor at the Haunted Lincoln Theater.
Speakers include Patrick Burns, John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and Keith Age.
Also, Lynn Adams, Luke Galbarski, Dale Kazmarek, Stephen LeChance, and psychic Ken Bird.
Don't miss this two-day event with special investigations and tours sold on a first-come, first-served basis.
To register, guys, go to www.prairieghost.com/conference.html or just call 1-888-446-7859.
Broadcasting live from this event will be the Ghostly Talk radio crew and Nathan S. and Sean B. from the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Witness a special live performance on the Lincoln stage from Spectrum Men, the Atlanta horror punk band made up of real-life ghost hunters.
Admission remains the same as 1997, $50 per person.
It's the 12th annual Haunted America Conference in Decatur, Illinois with Troy Taylor. Register now.
Hi, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
I think we're back there, Sean.
Can you still hear me?
I can hear you. We didn't lose you this time.
That's good. That's good. That must have been Dougie's fine little cable he gave me last week trying to sabotage.
Ghostly talk, trying to bring down the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. All that talk you hear of us being friends, it's not true. We're after each other.
I know it. They're after our ratings, which is apparently what number.
They want our time slot. They want to be a 5-hour show every Sunday night.
They want to be number 500 out of 500. But hey, man, what a great night we're having, guys. But you know what, Demon Hunter, who we got on the phone line, because you called him, so you'd know. But we have the author of Cape Encounters, Mr. Gary Joseph. Gary, what's happening, brother?
Here I am. How are you? Good to be here.
Yes,
welcome,
sir.
Yes, Gary. Sir. Welcome.
Thank you.
So what's going on out that way, Gary? You got the cool book, Cape Encounters, out. And I told everybody a little bit about it before. I just said it's a collection of some good old-fashioned ghost stories, and that's exactly what it is, ghost stories out that way. And what made you think about writing a book? What got you started into this?
Well, I had had experiences happen to me and my family in the house that I grew up in, and they kind of stayed with me for years and years, and I thought that it might be kind of neat to someday kind of hunt around and find if other people had stories like these.
Yeah, and, you know, that's common too, Gary, because I thought about actually writing a book. Of course, I'm not that talented. So.
And he can't read or write, so it's...
Maybe I can write a comic book, you know, just like a... But, you know, I grew up in a haunted house too, Gary. I bore everybody every week about my tales. It's usually always something new from my childhood, but a lot of authors, I think, come from a background like that, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, you're a kid or you're a little kid and something's happening and you don't really understand it, but you hear it. I heard my aunt tell these stories and I kind of ooh and nod and, you know, put them in the back of my mind and always remember them. And, you know, when you grow up, you tend to do the same things that you like way back when, but, you know, a little more sophisticated, you hope.
Hey, Sean, I just wanted to remind our listeners that if they have questions for either Gary or Dan, either of our guests tonight, they can call our call-in line at 605-475-8590, enter the conference number 555-1081, and if they want to ask a question, they just press 1-1 to raise their hand. You can find that number on our website at www.ghostanddemon.com. So, Gary, people tell me all the time, you write about what you know. What experiences did you have that led you to writing this book?
Well, when I was a kid, I had in the house that I grew up, noises like footsteps and sounds of like a bookcase falling in the upstairs bedrooms in my house, which nobody was living in at the time. And my dad used to run upstairs when we'd hear the noise and wonder what fell down upstairs. And there wasn't any furniture up there to fall down, and it wasn't squirrels on the roof, and, you know, it definitely sounded like what it was, and we'd hear footsteps pacing, you know, from one room to the other, and we just kind of grew up with it.
Right. You know, that's the same thing that happened to me, Gary. I had the footsteps, and I'd come home from school, me and Mom would be watching Woody Woodpecker cartoons on the downstairs TV, and you would hear all kinds of stuff happening upstairs, and when you went up there, there was nothing moved.
Exactly.
I mean, that is almost identical to what I experienced, too. Now, when you lived in that house, let's take you back.
Now, could be because of what they slipped in the Sean's juice to calm him down, but...
hey, Ritalin's came a long way, Gary, you know what I mean? But anyway, let's go back to little Gary Joseph. You're, what, 8 to 13 years old?
Oh, yeah, probably about 8. Yeah, that's a pretty good guess.
You're living in this old house where out in Cape Cod, or...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you're living in this old house. What was one of the first experiences you think happened, the one that had the most impact on you?
Probably the noises. Probably hearing a big crash. Like one day we were out in the backyard playing softball, and we could hear it outside of the house. And the only one in the house was my mom, and she was downstairs. And as soon as we heard the noise, she poked her head out the window, and my dad was out there pitching the ball to us, and she said, you know, come inside and go upstairs and check with that noise. And so he did, and nothing was up there. But it was loud. It sounded like someone pushed a whole bookcase or chest of drawers or something heavy over and crash, bang. And, yeah, never forgot that.
Wow. Well, now, you know, I grew up with two stepbrothers, and one of them lived with us upstairs. And, of course, this was a true haunted house that we lived in because it kept on after he left. But I remember one day I came home from school, and it was real loud upstairs. We heard a bunch of thumping and stuff like that. And me and Mom went up to the base of the staircase, and we seen a whole trail of Frito-Lay's potato chips. They were going from my room, which was kind of a hallway in those old farmhouses. You know how they did it back then, Gary. But it was Frito-Lay's potato chips, and they went all the way up the stairs. So we followed them. We went up there. My brother was passed out on his bed with a marijuana cigarette in his hand. Not that we condone that, but...
I wonder how the Frito-Lay's got there.
Yeah, for that time at least. But, you know, late at night I'd hear the whispers and stuff like that. And it's got to be amazing being a kid, or it was amazing being a child growing up trying to grasp what was going on. You know, were your parents religious?
No, I wouldn't say so, not particularly.
Okay, because my folks were Baptists, so they really didn't buy into all that stuff. My mom did, my dad didn't. So when I told them about the voices at night, or when I would creep across the bedroom floor to sleep at the bottom of the bed with my parents, he didn't understand it at the time, you know, because he didn't believe in that kind of stuff. But he did have a preacher come through and bless the house and everything. And I got to tell you, I think the activity got worse.
Really?
Yeah, after the house was blessed, I think the activity picked up.
Yeah, we never looked at it as a negative kind of thing. We just thought it was part of living in an old house.
Yeah. Did you ever find out what it might have been, the hauntings, the people who lived there before?
There had been some people living before us years back. There was a fisherman who was a taxi cab driver, and his mother was blind. And I guess he used to take care of her.
That sounds like the beginning of a joke. I knew this fisherman who was a taxi driver. His mother was blind, and one day he walked into a bar, and the devil was bartending. And
a fisherman, a blind chick, and walk into a bar with a monkey. Yeah.
The devil looks up and says, "Is this a joke?" No.
But you know what, Gary? You started this out. You wrote this great book, Cape Encounters. You co-authored it. What's the first steps to writing a successful book like Cape Encounters? What did you start out doing to get started?
Well, first we didn't really have a book in mind. We had like a magazine article. We figured we would go and search some stories out and try to get it published in a local paper or something. And what happened was it just snowballed. Everyone that we interviewed, talked to, said, you know, well, you know who you really should talk to is this person. And that person would give us a couple more stories, and before we knew it, you know, we had a book on our hands, and we just had such great stuff from all over, and, you know, people that were well-known on the Cape for other things, like Jack Bragginton Smith. He owned a restaurant on the Cape for many years, a famous Cape Cod curmudgeon. You could never tell if he was, you know, being serious or not. He was always kind of crotchety, and a lot of people knew Jack, and, you know, find out, kind of surprised to learn that Jack also had a ghost story, like a lot of the people in our book.
Right. Now, living there on the water, okay, Gary, do you think, because Cape Cod's right there off the, is that the, I'm going to show my ignorance here.
Yes, Sean, it's Atlantic? A cape, so it's near the water.
Is it the Atlantic or the Pacific, or what is that? The
That would be the Atlantic show.
Okay. I said show my ignorance, folks. Here we go. But, Gary, so you're right there off the water. What do you think? Actually, I have two questions for you. Do you think the water has something to do with the hauntings, and how many of the hauntings occur right there on the waterfront?
A lot of people said that. A lot of people told us that when we did the book. Guy that we interviewed down in a town called Dennis, he lives right near Bass River, which is one of the major rivers on the Cape, and he kind of had the attitude that something about the water kind of energized spirits or, you know, encouraged spirits to congregate. But, you know, the living like to be around the water too, so afterwards it kind of makes sense that they might want to hang around.
And you get those right. Ghosts of the old fishing captains, arg, that don't want to give up their ship, and widows walking across the widow walks on the top of the houses and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, you got plenty of old sea captains.
So how much do you hear about that, Gary? I mean, a lot of us hear about the home hauntings and the woman that walks the cemetery, stuff like that. But what about, like, the Flying Dutchman? I mean, have you heard that story?
Yeah. For our book, we kind of focus on contemporary stories, things that happened recently to, you know, people you could meet and talk to. So people reading it could kind of identify with the story, like your story, you know, something that happened to you, and you can go back and remember it. But, yeah, we heard all the legends. There's a legend of the Phantom Fleet, which is all the lost ships off the shores of the Cape that on one night in midsummer, they rise up from the depths and they kind of sail off into the horizon.
Yeah. And that's kind of like the Davy Jones in Pirates of the Caribbean, you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly.
Now, do people, like, worry about these phantom fleets and stuff like this? The locals, do they not go out on certain nights because they're afraid the phantom fleet will be out there? And...
I think those are just stories, but there's a few that still hang around.
And like, besides the phantom fleet, like, are there other ghost ships that float around the Cape?
Well, there's sea serpents. There's pirates. There's Sam Bellamy. And the Widder, you might have heard of the Widder, the pirate ship, and Black Bellamy from England.
No, pirate. No, tell us a story about that.
Well, there was a girl that he fell in love with called Goody Hallett, and she lived out in the dunes of a town called Wellfleet, which is on the Outer Cape, with the perfect image of the howling winds and, you know, the desolate moors of the Cape. And he was a pirate from the West Indies, and she was probably about 15 or 16 at the time. And, you know, he kind of was bewitched by her. They kind of claimed she was a witch. And he would come back.
Banner, banner anyway! Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Gary, but you said she was a witch. I had to yell burner.
He had to cackle.
Burner, she's a witch! Yeah, that's a classic quote from...
That would be Monty Python.
Yeah, I can't
Sean.
Think of the Monty Python.
So they thought she was a witch, and he fell in love with her, and did that have anything to do with his sinking or his sticking around?
Yeah, apparently, he came back. He pirated a ship, and he brought it back at the height of a storm because he wanted to see her so bad, and he ended up getting wrecked up on the rocks, and the ship was destroyed and sunk until they found it not too many years ago, and the crew was killed, and according to some stories, he was killed, and to some others, he kind of was a little bit survived, but he was slow, and she took care of him for the rest of his life.
And now he sits off the coast waiting to get back to her every night on the full moon and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Every night, and they're both fated to walk the beach calling out to each other, but they can never meet.
You know what, guys? That's a paranormal story within itself because she took care of him for the rest of his life. I myself can't find a woman more than 6 months. I'm just saying.
Maybe if you gave up the fart machine, Sean, but...
Hey, Gary, have you heard the new fart machine we got here in the studio?
Say yes, Gary, so he doesn't play it. Say yes, say yes.
I guess yes.
Okay, you heard it. Well, you're going to get it. There, you got it anyway. But anyway, man, you wrote this book, and I don't know if any – I know a lot of our listeners out there,
they've been around a lot of the Troy Taylors and the authors here in the paranormal. And now, of course, we're talking to you, which is a huge honor because Cape Encounters is a great book. And I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, do you go door to door to find these stories? Do you look them up online to get a lead? How do you do that?
You put an ad in the paper saying, if you have a ghost story, please call me at.
Well, originally it was probably a lot of chutzpah, I guess, going to senior centers, fire stations, any places a congregation of older people have been around town a long time, VFW posts, and just come in and, ask anybody if they've seen a ghost.
Right, right. Well, I've done that before. I've got ran out of a couple pubs like that.
You've got run out of a couple pubs for quite a few reasons, Sean, but...
Only because I took you with me. Oh, man, that's it, Gary. You got to come down here to Indiana. We all got to have a man's night out. We got to do the pub scene. There's a lot of haunted pubs here in Indiana. What about out there? Yes, I'm from Indiana. And
Evansville?
We are far from, not Evansville. I'm from Whiteland, Indiana. That's smack dab in the middle of the cornfields.
Yes, he gets a lot ghosts of corn out there. And
Right. You go right down Bob's Road, and you take a left on the first dirt road you come to, and there I am. So so we're as far as the seaport as you can get, but, we have ghost stories out here of our own, and that's why I was asking you. I just don't know where you would start. I mean, you have so many people that every once in a while, usually around Halloween, autumn time, people come forward. They're like, ooh, I have a spectral lady in the backyard that comes out, every 3 days or whatever, and they choose to come out around October and tell us about that. So I didn't know. That's why I was asking you about the water connection before. Apparently, there's a water connection and a corn connection. Because if there's a cornfield here in Indiana, there seems to be an apparition that's seen walking around the corn stalks. You know what I mean?
If you build it, he will come, right?
Yeah. Repeatedly, apparently. Because you see a lot of them out here, man, around the cornfields. They just, I don't know. It's something about corn and water. But like you were talking about the Flying Dutchman. Let's delve into that a little bit. What is the story on the Flying Dutchman? Do you know anything about that? I mean, the story?
Well, Flying Dutchman, I think, was a cursed ship that somebody was on, and it did something bad, and so it was fated to sail the seas forever, and never finding port, and just sailing forever, and, kind of being in a bad situation all the time. I don't know if it ever came to Cape Cod, though.
That's just kind of like this show.
With all the places that you went to and asked questions of all these people, how many of these stories do you really rang true, and how many of them just seem like stories to you?
We tried to talk to people that we wanted the people that were maybe a little bit reluctant to tell this story. Because we thought that was the goal. That was, the kernels, the real good stuff were the ones that, should I really talk and make this public instead of the ones that are beating down your door and saying, I saw this and I saw that and can I be in your next book and that sort of thing. Those we tried to stay away from. So,
you kept keeping Sean away. So,
yeah, can I be in your next book, Gary?
gave a lot of credibility to those people because we kind of had to, really talk them into it.
And did you go to any of the houses that they said were haunted and check them out?
Yeah, it was really cool. Almost every person we interviewed afterwards, they'd give us a tour of their house, usually a really cool, older, historic house. And we'd see old spinning wheels in the attic and beehive ovens and minister's cabinets and, round wall stone Cape Cod cellars and hidden tunnels and places where slaves were kept in the Underground Railroad. And, probably would be never any other reason how you get into a house like this and get to look around. So
that is impressive because when people meet us, they don't let Sean and I anywhere near their homes. So it's that I'm impressed with that. When you went into any of these homes, did you get the haunted feeling of that maybe something was watching you, or did you give the location to any ghost hunters to go check out or anything like that?
Well, there was only one time that I ever got kind of weird feeling, because most of the time we're doing these interviews during the day and it's the middle of the summer, the windows are open and, ghostly feeling is the last thing you get. But
Dan and I were in a town called Provincetown, and we were in an old restaurant that was being refurbished as a restaurant for probably the 12th time. And there was a woman in there, a housekeeper, that we talked to, and she was the only person in the building. And I was standing at the base of a set of stairs, and she was talking to Dan back and forth, and I started to hear what I thought was, you know, like heavy breathing, like gasping, like... And I started to kind of freak out, and I thought, well, there's nobody else in here but us. You know, I kind of looked up the stairs, and I looked over at them, and they were just talking away and not paying attention to anything at all. I said, I must have heard one ghost story too many, because I'm hearing things. But after I got out of there, I was sure that's what it was.
Really?
Well, you know what? That sounds like a lot of times I get phone calls, and it's heavy breathing on the other end. Do you think that might be paranormal?
No, Sean, that you're reversing that. People get calls from you and hear the heavy breathing.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Gary, you're next.
All right, I'll wait after I hang up the phone.
It'll only be a couple minutes. I'll call you, but it won't last long.
That's all right. I don't either.
Oh, hold on. I don't have my bell. Hold on a second. Gary's the first guest that gets the bell. Yeah. Way to go, Gary. We love you, man. You know, there's modern science has come up with new ways to deal with that.
They have. They're not natural ways, though.
They're not. I can't afford it. But you know what? You started going out here and asking all these people these different stories. What about cemeteries? How many stories have you ran into about haunted cemeteries? Because I love them. I love going out, taking pictures, doing EVP at the cemeteries. A lot of people say it's a waste of time because the dead's no longer there. The ghosts are no longer there. But what do you think?
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, when people were alive, they didn't spend their time in the cemetery, so you think, why would they hang around?
But well, you obviously haven't met our listeners because most of them spend all their time in cemeteries.
Yeah, we actually had a cemetery called the Sagamore Cemetery, and we had a guy, like, take us on a guided tour, and he knew a lot about the history, and there were a lot of, like, the famous locals and the town fathers that were buried in the cemetery. And there was one guy that he swore was still there because he'd smell the cigar smoke. This guy was a caretaker of the cemetery, and he'd smell the cigar smoke late at night and really get spooked. And he had a psychic come in. And she took a picture of this old tree, and this tree is like the perfect Halloween tree. It's all twisted and gnarled and dead. And she took a picture of this tree, and she said that this founder of the town of Bourne, his name was Jonathan Bourne, that his spirit had gone into the tree. And when she took a picture of the tree, it had this weird, like, blue, like, hazy light kind of all around the tree. And about a week after I saw that picture, where I work, this woman that I work with, she had her sister had just come back from Ireland, and she had a bunch of photographs, and they had taken pictures of a tree called the Witch's Tree outside this castle in Ireland. And it was so weird, because when I saw the picture of this tree in Ireland, this blue haze, this kind of thing swirling around the tree, was identical in the picture from Ireland in the picture in the cemetery on Cape Cod. And this is within a week of seeing these two pictures.
Well, you know what? I love Ireland. I still want to go out there and visit it. A lot of my family's from there. What part of Ireland was that she went to, Gary? Do you know?
All I remember was a castle, and it was called the Witch's Forest, and there was a tree in this forest outside the castle that she'd taken a picture of. And this blue haze was just weird blue haze. Was just like the haze around the tree in the picture on Cape Cod.
Well, you know, there's a lot of castles in Ireland. I remember when they were building Euro Disney, they started building it up, and all of a sudden they stopped and said, you know, we better build this castle bigger. They actually have them here. They'll know what it's supposed to look like. You know, so it's...
I mean, do you think that was an actual photo of paranormal activity, or do you think that might have been sunlight, some kind of exposure to the camera? What do you think, Gary?
I don't know. It looked, it didn't look like sunlight to me. And if it was one picture like that, I'd say, okay, you know, something gets in front of a lens, or, you know, weird trick of the light or something like that. But to see two
pictures of supposedly haunted trees, you know, different parts of the world, and see them within a week, and they both look the same, you know, that, you know, kind of think twice about that.
So you grew up in a haunted... Yeah, dead air. It's a wonderful thing on the radio. Being tongue-tied is a perfect way to host a radio show. Anyway, you grew up in a haunted house. You've written a haunted book. How much does ghost stories really get involved with your life? I mean, are you going to be doing more books?
Is the book haunted, Gary?
If I bring this book home, am I guaranteed to have a ghost in my house? Is there what else do you do in the paranormal? Are you involved with any of the ghost groups out there? Are you
Well, I consider myself more of just a writer. I'm not so much a ghost hunter as a ghost story hunter. I like to kind of collect these stories and, you know, preserve them so they get passed down. It's a matter of record and they don't get lost, because there's some really cool stories out there. And, you know, we're working on a second book now, and it's going to have some really freaky stories that we got told during the course of writing the first book, and its signings and things like that. Just some real off-the-wall stuff that I think people really like.
You've got another book coming out. You got a working title or anything like that for it?
Well, I would call it Cape Encounters 2, but I'm sure when it comes out, it won't be that. But it's really just going to be some real wild stuff. It's hopefully going to have some kids talking to the ghost of an Indian chief, and just a lot of strange things, just real unusual, like one of a kind type stories.
Well, kids talking to an Indian chief, one of a kind story. I don't know. I think I heard that story when I watched the George Morrison movie, and that was a joke.
Yeah. the Indian and the
yeah,
Indian.
Yeah, that died. So on that note, so tell me where can people find your book, Gary?
Oh, everywhere. They can find it. If they're on the Cape, they can find it in all the gift shops, all the bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. We have our own website, CapeCodGhosts.com. So it's really kind of taken off, and it's all over the place.
So pretty much adult bookstores everywhere, G&D Show listeners.
Yeah, in the brown paper wrapper.
The comments of Sean Burrs do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
Normally, I don't have to play that when the guest is on there, Gary, but I just wanted it clear that find your book in respectable stores anywhere.
Respectable establishments.
Hey, they pay taxes, gentlemen. I'm just saying. But I tell you what, Gary, I love the book, and I can't wait for the second one to come out, man. And are you with a group right now? I mean, are you currently a ghost hunter?
No, I'm just, like I say, I'm just a ghost story hunter, not a ghost hunter. The only time that I did do some investigating was when I was offered the chance to stay overnight in a haunted inn, and I took a tape recorder on along to do like the EVP kind of thing, and there was a clock, an alarm clock that went off, and it had a radio alarm, so it started playing music, and I couldn't shut the thing off for a long time, and finally figured it out and had to unplug it. And the next morning, when I went through the tape, just the opposite of what you'd usually think of, you know, an EVP, like a voice being on the tape that wasn't there, you know, at the time that was recorded. Well, when I went and played the tape back, the music, the alarm that I'd heard from the radio that went off the night before wasn't on the tape, even though the tape was right next to the radio.
That actually sounds like something from that movie. What was that with John Cusack, that new ghost movie?
The haunted hotel room. That haunted hotel room movie. Yeah, I don't remember it either, Sean. We don't have Gigi on right now, so we're out of luck.
Yeah, well, that would be great. See, I want to be a famous author someday, Gary, so I'm going to steal your name if you don't mind.
Oh, and you know, a lot of people do.
That's right, everybody. I wrote Cape Encounters, and... I'm kidding.
Yep, there's another Gary Joseph on Cape Cod. He does floors.
What's that mean? Floors?
that's my famous. He installs floors. Whatever they mean, they say, "Oh, do you install floors?"
So for a good read, or if you need floors replaced, contact Gary Joseph. What's your website, Gary? I want to get a hold of you.
Oh, it's CapeCodGhosts.com, or you can go to CockleCovePress.com, and it'll lead you to the same place.
I want you to do something for me. Remember in the movie Jaws, at the beginning they said the kids are in the yard, in the car. Can you do that for me? Come on.
As bad as they did. They try to do a Maine accent, a New England accent in the movies. I don't think I have it.
I'm going to try to take your accent and use that to pick up chicks. So I'm studying your accent right now.
Don't worry about it. Sean can't do an accent to save his life. So your Cape folk are safe. Don't worry. But
kids in the car.
Now somebody, Gowan, just remind us that it's 1408, that movie you were trying to remember, Sean. 1408.
Oh, thanks. Gowan. Of course, that's Gowan, superstar Gowan, Jason Gowan.
But, Gary, we're going to have to wrap up so we can move along and catch up with our next guest for the night.
All right.
So thank you for joining us here tonight. We'll be sure to check out your book, and everybody else should check out Cape Encounters by Gary Joseph. And thanks again, Gary.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Gary. You rock, babe.
Take care, guy.
Take care. And, Sean, are you ready to take a quick break? And when we come back, we'll have our next guest for the night.
That's right, guys. Stick around. We're going to the ballpark. Up next, we got the big man Dan Gordon, author of Haunted Baseball. So stick around. Sure to be a good one.
That's right. We'll be right back.
The American Ghost Society's 12th annual Haunted American Conference will be held June 20th and 21st in Decatur, Illinois.
Hosted by Troy Taylor at the Haunted Lincoln Theater.
Speakers include Patrick Burns, John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and Keith Age.
Also, Lynn Adams, Luke Nalbarski, Dale Kazmarek, Stephen LeChant, and psychic Ken Bird.
Don't miss this two-day event with special investigations and tours sold on a first-come, first-served basis.
To register, guys, go to www.prairieghost.com/conference.html or just call 1-888-446-7859.
Broadcasting live from this event will be the Ghostly Talk Radio crew and Nathan S. and Sean B. from the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Witness a special live performance on the Lincoln stage from Spectrum Men, the Atlanta horror punk band made up of real-life ghost hunters.
Admission remains the same as 1997, $50 per person.
It's the 12th annual Haunted America Conference in Decatur, Illinois with Troy Taylor. Register now.
Just when you thought you've seen it all, here comes Scarefest 2008, crawling with real ghost hunters, cryptozoologists, paranormal experts, even exorcists. We've also invited stars from the House of 1,000 Corpses, the Devil's Reject, and we're hosting our very own Friday the 13th reunion. Make plans now to meet your favorite stars at the Scarefest, the biggest horror and paranormal convention in the Southeast, September 12th to 14th at Lexington, Kentucky's Lexington Convention Center. We're waiting for you right now at thescarefest.com. Just don't come alone.
Attention, paranormal investigators in New Jersey and beyond. Be warned, this is not a parafest and not a social conference. This is intense. The Paranormal Intensive 2008 is coming to Hackettstown, New Jersey on Saturday, September 20th. This all-day event will offer workshop after workshop to hone your skills and broaden your investigative knowledge of the paranormal. Pick and choose the workshops you want at only $25 each. You can register online at www.njghs.net/paraintensive.html using PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa. That night, enjoy a buffet dinner and spirit circle with Jane Doherty, psychic medium at the haunted Charlie Brown Steakhouse in Hackettstown. This event is $60 per person and includes the dinner, tax, tip, and spirit circle in the private dining room on the second floor of this former hotel where the young, distraught girl drowned in the bathtub and haunts this place to the day. Seating for this event is severely limited, so register online ASAP. The Paranormal Intensive 2008, September 20th, Hackettstown, New Jersey. be there.
It's Keith Age with the Louisville Ghost Hunters. You're listening to Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show, the coolest show on radio.
And we're back.
Yes, we are back. I don't know why, but...
Hey, Sean, we didn't take the chance to tell everybody who was listening in the chat room tonight.
That's right. We got our very own special breed Prism Lisa. We got Ghost Chaser. We got Marcy. We got Sean with a W. We got GT Doug, the Big Mac. We got Mary M. and the crazy man, Jay Gowan.
And we just had Becky Ray in there, too.
Yeah, apparently they all dropped off. But you know what, Demon Hunter, little brother, I've been waiting all week for this because everybody knows that I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. Maybe they don't, but now you guys do. I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. I'm a big Major League Baseball fan. Like I said before, take me out to the ballgame. Take me out to the crowd. Tonight's guest, Mr. Haunted Baseball, Dan Gordon, author of The Haunted Baseball. Dan, what's happening, brother?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Dan. Welcome to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. So, Haunted Baseball, go.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
So, hold on. I told Dan that I would do this for him.
There you go. Dan, that's did you ask for that during the break? Because, I mean, really.
He did. Dan did. He asked for it. That's the kind of raunch Dan likes. What's going on, Dan? You wrote this killer book about my favorite pastime, America's favorite pastime, baseball, but you delved into the haunted aspect of it. What made you think about this? Are you a baseball fan?
Oh, yeah, diehard. You know, I followed it my whole life. My dad wanted to send me to baseball rehab. He threatened me. And I even, when I got out of school, I traveled around the world actually looking at baseball. So I've always been... But yeah, you know, I thought it'd be kind of neat to look at some of the superstition, and because the game is so superstition and so much history in it, all that. So that's what got me into it.
Go ahead, Nate. No, you first. You beat me to it. Go ahead.
That's right, me first, baby. Hot potato. But you know what, man? Hey, Dano, we got a lot of us have learned about ghosts and hauntings and stuff. They were watching. Field of Dreams, and of course it talks about Shoeless Joe Jackson, the big man. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
So what do we know about Shoeless Joe? Is that how much of that movie, Field of Dreams, those ghost stories, did that tie in at all with real life hauntings in the major leagues?
I mean, definitely. A lot of the stories are kind of like that, and a lot of the ghosts that play people. Describe like former players and, you know, that wander around, don't want to leave the ballpark. So, yeah, in some ways. And, you know, we have a guy who's actually a doctor out in Illinois who actually thought that he's encountered Buck Weaver, another a teammate of Shoeless Joe's. Joe Creedy of the White Sox, the third baseman, actually thought he encountered that Shoeless Joe is still hanging out at U.S. Cellular in the form of a bird. So, you know, get a lot of different stories.
Now, Sean, you do know that movie came from a book, right?
Yes, I do, Demon Hunter. Thank you for reminding me, but I thought it was real there for a minute. But, you know, you follow around. How many of these ballparks have you got to go to first? First, I got to get the – I'm a huge baseball fan, so I got to get that out first. How many of these ballparks have you been to?
Between my co-author and I, we probably went to a couple dozen. And we interviewed over 800 players and a few hundred more stadium workers. And, you know, so we did a lot of stuff in the minors, too, because, you know, a lot of coaches in the minors are former players in the majors. So,
you never talked to the Yankees, did you, Dano? Because I'm pretty sure they sold their soul to the devil. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry, I just didn't want the Yankees suing us there, Dan, so...
I'm just saying, they're two pretty boys. They're pretty boys, overpaid, that's all I'm saying, guys.
My co-author is a Yankees fan, so, you know, we have to have the Yankees in there. But, like, a lot of players talk about Yankee Stadium being haunted, so...
Now, what do you think with them building the new stadium? Are the spirits of the old players going to abandon the Yankees now that they're moving and, you know, they'll lose that edge they've had? That surely the fact that they buy the most expensive players out there has not led them to where they are. It's the history of the Yankees that have
They'll definitely have more money in the new place, you know, with all those luxury boxes and everything. But we asked Jeter that because Jeter's one of the biggest believers in you know, that Yankee Stadium, that the ghost of the Babe and Lou Gehrig are there. And he said that, you know, because they're moving the monuments over and some of the architectural elements in the new Yankee Stadium will be there. And it's right across the street, so. You know, not too far for them to travel.
Now, I hear that you can actually buy parts of Yankee Stadium. People can buy, they're going to auction off the seats and the hot dog stands and even the urinals. Are you thinking the people were going to be bringing the ghosts of Yankee Stadium home with them there?
Wait a second, I got a urinal for sale. If anybody's interested, it'd be $150.
No, Sean, you're not allowed to sell the ones you stole out of the rest stops.
I hope they bring in the urinals. I'm sure they'll be bringing some of the stenches.
That's for free, Dano.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's kind of a cool idea. I don't know. I hadn't even heard that. But
somebody told me that they were auctioning off this stuff, and all he wants to do is be able to buy the seats he gets it every year with his season tickets. But I want.
You know what? You know what, Nathan, go ahead. I'm sorry, bro.
I just wanted to ask, you know, out of all the stadiums that you went to, which was your favorite?
Actually, Dodger Stadium was really cool. I mean, it's definitely not the oldest, but, you know, just really, you know, as amazing sight lines and, you know, the backdrop of, you know, the mountains and everything. It's really, really nice ballpark.
I'm sorry.
I let the pause stay there so that all the people that hate you now, Sean, can.
Well, the ex-wife, she was a big fan. Hey, but I got a question, Dano. I got Mary M from the chat site. She said, "Is Wrigley Field haunted?"
Yeah, according to just about everybody that's been, you know, all the players talk about. You know, some of the players talk about when balls get hit in the ivy, they can't find them afterwards. But a lot of the workers there talk about the ghost of Charlie Grimm. And, you know, a lot of security guards late at night say they sometimes see him, like see a shadow or they hear, you know, they hear his voice. And they claim that, you know, when they're out on the field, sometimes the dugout phone will ring. I mean, the bullpen phone will ring from the dugout and there's nobody there and they think maybe it's Charlie calling in for a relief pitcher. So, yeah, there's a lot of bizarre stories from there. They talk about the ghost of Harry Carey there. And,
I got to do my Harry Carey. Ready? Are you guys ready for this? Dan, you ready?
Oh, yeah. Listen.
Holy cow, everybody! Was that good?
The impersonations of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates. Anyway, Gary, you know, obviously, you went to all these places. People talked about the different ghosts. Like, of all the places that you went to, which of the places had the stories that were the most consistent? Like, most people had the same stories about the same thing.
Actually, Dodger Stadium. We interviewed a lot of it. We didn't get any stories from players there, but a lot of stories from the people who work there. And, you know, lots of people talk about hearing footsteps there. All the security guards say they claim they hear, like, a woman in high heels walking the top deck. There's a few people talk about seeing someone walking across the field late at night. You know, a lot of the workers there have to work, you know, after the lights go off and everything.
No.
So, yeah,
you get a lot of stories about the players that have been there, but you get any stories of, like, the ghost of a hot dog vendor or, you know, the janitor or the drunken fan who always sat in seat 350 who, died of cirrhosis or something? I don't know.
Actually, at Wrigley, I don't know, Ursula Bielski from Chicago, she actually went in there in 98 when the team brought her in after Harry Carey died, and they actually, she claims she found some, you know, activity in the bleachers section, you know, some So maybe that was a bleach of bums or whatever.
Fans that just won't go.
Ursula's wrote a lot of books about hauntings in Chicago and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's got it, man. But what they actually they were asking me another question, Dano, about the baseball and stuff like that out there. I want to know personally, because I lost
the
chat question. But I wanted to ask you, how much of this stuff happens on the field and how much of it happens off the field, like behind the scenes in the shower room and stuff like that?
Yeah, most of it's off the field, like in the tunnels and vaults. Like at Dodger Stadium, a lot of the merchandise people claim that these vaults where they keep the old Brooklyn Dodgers memorabilia and the old hunting trophies from Walt O'Malley, the old former owner of the team. You know, that a lot of that, those places are haunted, and they claim, you know, to see stuff or hear stuff there. But, you know, basically, yeah, a lot of that. Miguel Batista, of the, when he was with the Blue Jays, said that, as a pitcher, says that, you know, he was playing Native American flute. He's, like, really connected with the Native American community. And he claims, you know, somebody, a ghost swatted the flute out of his hands. You know, and then he found out that, you know, the land itself was built over, you know, that the Rogers Center was built over a Native American community. At one point, they found fishing wares and stuff like that there. So, you know, he thinks that had something to do with it. But, you know, definitely a lot of it is behind the scenes. And, you know, also we got a lot of stuff from hotels, too.
Now, we have a question from the chat room. People want to know how many of these hauntings in these baseball fields and stadiums have been investigated by paranormal groups?
Not that many. And you know, it's kind of, you know, it surprised me. And I think a lot of it, a lot of this stuff is we didn't even know about, I mean, until we started talking to players or talking to people. You know, stuff they talk about all the time in the clubhouse and on the team buses going into places. And, you know, it's definitely, but it hadn't been something that been made public before. So maybe a lot of, you know, investigators hadn't been aware of it. So definitely, we found this ball field down in St. Petersburg where, the Yankees trained there, spring training from 1920 to 1961, and there are many people who work there. I talk about seeing the ghost of the Babe and also of Casey Stengel, and even like people who work in the youth center that used to be the former clubhouse, they claim that they see card games there, Yankee players playing card games. So they did bring in an investigator at one point.
Do they see the young Babe, or do they see the Babe who like used to have to hit the ball when he got older and have somebody else run the bases for him? Because, you know, it's kind of like old Elvis versus young Elvis. You just never know which ghost you're going to see.
He's a hunk of burning love.
They didn't say his age, but definitely it seemed like he was older because, you know, they described him as kind of, you know, larger. And, you know, when he was young, he was kind of slim, actually. It's, you know, he kind of got bigger with age.
I respect a man who can smoke 50 cigars a day and still get out there and hit the ball. Like, can I say?
Hey, see, I do, especially the guys that can drink a whole vat of Budweiser and make it out to first base. I'm happy with that. I respect the guy. I love him. But we got a question from the chat room, Dano, by Prism Lisa, very beautiful lady. I had to throw that in there. But she said, why did they choose ballparks for the book? Why ballparks, Dano?
Well, I actually thought it would be kind of a neat fit, although, you know, when we started out, we didn't know whether we'd find anything, but, you know, ballparks, you know, have a lot of history to it, you know, and, you know, Yankee and Fenway and Wrigley, that, you know, they've been around for 100 years. They're places where people have their ashes sprinkled and deposited. You know, so many people, you know, the teams allow that, and sometimes, you know, they have quiet ceremonies, but sometimes fans just, you know, scatter their ashes, and we interviewed a lot of folks that did that and stuff, and also, just, you know, they're referred to as churches. It's just places where a lot of people have the best memories of their lives, and, you know, especially players. But, you know, a lot of people, a lot of energy there and a lot of passion and memories. So it just seemed kind of, you know, to me, to Mickey and I, that it would be a great fit for, you know, that ghost would, you know, we could find these kind of stories.
Now, what was your favorite part of writing this book, Dan?
I'd say the best part was just getting the chance to see behind the scenes, and you know, talking to players was great. But you know, sometimes it wasn't as glamorous as you think, because, you know, often you're talking to them and they're in their jock strap or something like that, and I'm not, it's not like, you know, you're in the...
It's kind of like doing the show with Sean. Yeah, yeah.
But like,
I don't wear
a
jock strap, folks.
Yeah, but it was kind of neat meeting, I mean, some players especially, some players, like, gave me a lot of their time, but, like, definitely seeing some of the behind-the-scenes things and getting to, you know, see some of the... what happens, you know, in the clubhouse and before the games and, you know, behind some of the things that go on in the tunnels and the way they prepare for the games. It was just really neat.
And when you told them you were writing a book on haunted fields and stadiums, were the players excited? Were they really happy to get involved with what you were working on?
Yeah, actually, you'd be amazed how many, like, asked us, like, well, you know, let us know when it comes out. They wanted to buy the book, you know, just because it is something that they talk about a lot. You know, every team's got their stories. Every team's got, you know, every team has their set of stories that they talk about all the time, you know, different hotels or different ballparks. And you know, so they were kind of interested in, like, finding out, like, all together what was out there. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of guys were open. Occasionally some guys were kind of really so spooked by it because they were such, you know, strong belief. Like, Big Poppy in Boston, you know, you know, we were asking him about the Vannoy Hotel. The Red Sox had a lot of, you know, talked about that hotel a lot, and he was like, he didn't want to talk about it at all. You know, and so sometimes, occasionally it's like that. But majorly, you know, most of the time we were really surprised how open they were. And players were even outing each other. I mean, like, you don't see that, you know, in other things with baseball. There's the old, you know, adage, like, what goes on in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse. But players all the time were saying, like, oh, you know, go talk to Hafner, he's got something, you know. So it was kind of cool.
It's kind of like Nathan being on the road with him, Dano, because he says what happens on the road stays on the road. It doesn't, you know what I mean?
Well, if you'd stop making a fool of yourself on the road, I'd stop talking about it, Sean.
Now, how would I do that? We would lose ratings, my brother. But, Dano, I got a question for you. How many people have been, like, their ashes spread out at home plate at these different ball fields? I mean, how many do you know of? I heard a Wrigley.
It varies from ballpark to ballpark, but, like, for instance, at the Hall of Fame, you know, in Cooperstown, they have the double day field there, and there's been ashes sprinkled at every single position. You know, that's just the official stuff, but a lot of people, you know, do it, like, unofficially, and, like, the security guards at Wrigley actually are trained to keep an eye on the ivy because of people all the time that try to, you know, lean over the wall and just, like, sprinkle the ashes, but they say that it, like, kills the ivy when they do that. So,
right.
Yeah, so it varies, you know, but I don't know if there's a way, there could ever be a way of knowing exactly, but, you know, we interviewed one gentleman, he's actually a friend of mine and an author, but who sprinkled his father's ashes on by basically tying his, you know, he had a press credential, and he basically was tying a shoe and, like, just pouring the ashes of his dad, because his dad was a big Giants fan, and it was kind of, you know, meaningful for him to do that.
Right. Was that before or after the steroids case? It's not been proven, of course. I'm just saying. I think Nathan takes steroids to do the show. I think so. So
I have to keep up my strength to be able to do the show with you, Sean.
But, Dan, you've been out here. You've been rubbing shoulders with big cats. What was the biggest baseball player you've ever been up next to interviewing with a ghost story?
Travis Hafner, I mean, biggest name or biggest size?
Oh, biggest name. I'm the biggest size, Dan, but the biggest name, you know.
Well, Jeter, of course, and Big Poppy, but, you know, guys like, we talked to Willie Mays. He didn't have a story, but he told us, you know, he was talking a little bit about, we were asking him about the baseball gods, and a lot of players believe that the baseball gods are a real thing, that, you know, there are these set of guys that kind of just look down, and if a player is acting out of order, they zap them with something, you know. You know, like, you get your turn to get injured, or your turn to, you know, go in a slump or whatever. But, there's just a ton of guys, you know, Derek, Yeah, just a ton of guys all over, basically.
Well, I want to get the chance to ask you what your favorite story is from the book there, but before we go any further, I want to make sure we get out your web address and where people can find the book.
Sure. It's hauntedbaseball.com is the web address, and it's got a sample chapter on there, and the book's pretty much everywhere. It's in its fourth printing, and it's been going pretty well. So, I mean, it's in bookstores, I guess, .coms.
And they can find it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and
all the dot coms.
So,
that's no books.
And you know, which of the stories from your book was really your favorite to get out there and find out like this the secret haunted paranormal lives of the baseball games?
I liked, you know, being a Red Sox fan. I mean, I liked. There's a story about the. We had several stories from Fenway, but. One was from a PA announcer, Carl Bean, the current PA guy, and he thinks that a former PA announcer, Sherm Feller, is in his booth, and he talks about bizarre things that happen in the booth, like, you know, headsets flying off and, you know, just strange equipment failures and announcements going missing and that kind of thing. But, you know, Sherm Feller was, you know, growing up, I just remember his voice, and I just remember... He had this really deep baritone voice, and he was like a famous. He was a music composer. He wrote this song, "Summertime, Summertime." He just did a lot of stuff, but he was just a really part of the Fenway experience. So it was kind of a cool story for me.
So if people want to hear EVPs over the radio, they should listen to Red Sox games on the air. So maybe they'll hear something. And
yes, always listen to Red Sox games, guys. You will not lose. Well. You might.
Now, you're a Red Sox fan and your partner is a Yankees fan. How much did you believe in the curse of the Babe until it was broken?
I guess sometimes I couldn't help but, you know, wonder because, I mean, there was just so many times, you know, they just choked every September. You know, they you know, lead you on, you know, and you just thought they could do it and that was it. You know, in 2003, when you know they lost in Game 7 in the 11th inning, I was, you know, I just like, how long is this going to go on? And I think a lot of fans felt that way. But yeah. We interviewed a lot of players, and a lot of players, you know, Red Sox players all the way back to the 40s, and a lot of players didn't believe in it. They just kind of thought that it was just bad luck. Or some of them just talk about the ghost of Yankee Stadium, you know. Basically helping the Yankees out, but
well,
for
those who don't know the curse of the Babe, the owner of the Babe Ruth was a member of the Red Sox team, and when the owner of the Red Sox wanted to put on a Broadway show called No No Nanette, he sold Babe Ruth to the Yankees, and from that day forth, up until what was it? Was it last year or the year before that the Red Sox finally broke the curse?
2004.
I have been out of the circle there for a while. It's in 2004 they finally broke the curse, and the curse was almost 50 years old, wasn't it?
Yeah, the guy wussed out, and he let Babe go, the hope of the Irish everywhere in Boston, and we've never got over it since. Well, we have actually won the World Series, but been a long time coming, right, Dan?
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing about the curse thing is that people didn't really start talking about it as an actual curse of the Babe until the mid-1980s. Before then, it was just hard luck or we're a cursed team. But, you know, a few sports writers started mentioning it, and it just caught on. I mean, Dan Shaughnessy, a Boston Globe writer, just wrote a book about it. And after that, it was just like, how you know, it just explained everything. You know, it was just kind of a way to kind of frame, you know, yeah, and some, you know, a lot of the curse stories, some of them are more believable than others, and, you know, some of them are just kind of a way to kind of, you know, digest a lot of pain. But, yeah, it's definitely, that story had, I mean, nothing else, it had a lot of logic to it. You know, I mean,
well, it's kind of, being a Red Sox fan is kind of like being an Indianapolis Colts football fan without the ghost story, you know what I mean? There's nothing to blame it on.
Well, Dan, we're actually going to have to wrap up because our time's going to be running out in 1 minute. But we wanted to thank you, Dan Gordon, author of Haunted Baseball, for being here with us tonight. And people can check out your book at www.hauntedbaseball.com, and they can find it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and bookstores everywhere. So thanks for joining us here tonight, Dan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And can you hold on the line until we're done wrapping up? We just want to take this chance to say goodnight to everybody and thank them for listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Be sure to check out our website at www.ghostanddemon.com and log on to our forums because we really want to hear from you.
And join us next Sunday when I'm not sure who our guest is going to be, but I can guarantee you more 13-year-old humor. So join us next week, Sunday, April. What is next week, Sean? It's April 13th. April 13th, we don't have a guest lined up, but we will have somebody spectacular here just for you.
Yeah, hey, don't go changing Ghost Hunters. We won't. We're out of here. We love you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
So say good night to the bad guys.